Hey guys, it is Ryan. For years, Chumba's been setting the bar for online social casino fun, and it just keeps getting better with new games released every week and daily bonuses to collect. The fun never stops. So claim your welcome bonus now at chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21 plus.
Hour number two of Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. Joe, we talked yesterday about the Vols, a big game coming up this weekend against Arkansas, and I've called it the most important game of Jeremy Pruitt's tenure so far at Tennessee. The quarterback position still getting a lot of conversation on Vol Twitter, as we know it will, and it will continue to do so probably from now until eternity. But Jarrett Garantano, I think, is going to be the starter on Saturday. I know we've heard over the last week or so that they're splitting reps at practice, a lot of things going on at the quarterback position. Jeremy Pruitt trying and harder to get somebody else at least ready to step in if need be. But I think Garantano is going to be the guy to start on Saturday against Arkansas. Joe, if things go poorly in that game, which very well could happen with Jarrett Garantano as the starting quarterback, what does Tennessee do at that position moving forward, assuming they lose that game and go to 2-4 on the year? How does that affect what Jeremy Pruitt does at quarterback?
Well, one of the all the screaming that will then accompany that loss, one of the biggest screams will be you cannot play him anymore. You've got to go younger. I think Jeremy Pruitt is only going to do that if he feels like Harrison Bailey can beat Texas A&M. Harrison Bailey can beat Auburn. I mean, it's an interesting bind. I don't think you go to the freshman until you're totally thrown in the towel. And when will that be? Jeremy Pruitt has to scratch out every single positive thing and success that he can do right now, and he knows it. So he's not looking at this like most Vols fans are, and he won't. So I could buy the idea that he's the next best option based on what we know of the other two guys. Apparently Brian Maurer just has not taken advantage of the opportunity. And yeah, I know some of that is injury, but you know, some I've heard some things out of Knoxville that indicate that, you know, Harrison Bailey is doing some things that the coaches like to see and that others in the room have not. As far as, you know, I mean, because you got to do that stuff. And so that's a good sign for Harrison Bailey. And I could buy that he would be the next guy in line here at some point, but I still would have to assume there's a big gap, which I know people are going to laugh at, but there is something to experience. And being out there and all the, you know, again, pre-snap, all that stuff. This is not a look to the sideline and read half the field and make one read, all that stuff that you see with a lot of other college offenses. That's not what it is. And that makes it harder to play a freshman.
It does. I think a lot of it depends on what it looks like if they lose. Like if Garantano is just awful and turns the ball over like he did against Kentucky, I think we're talking about a different situation here. I think it's very possible that Jarrett Garantano plays relatively well in this game by his standards and they still lose. I think that's absolutely possible in this game against Arkansas. That's a different story to me. If he goes out there and he's not turning the ball over and he's making the right decisions and Tennessee just gets beat, that's one thing. I think that can absolutely happen in this game against Arkansas. If he goes out there and it's a repeat of Kentucky, you got to make a change. I don't care if it's Harrison Bailey. Like, you can't continue to allow that to happen. I mean, that's the reason he's in. It's because you theoretically believe he's more prepared to take care of the ball. He makes the right decisions. He knows the offense. Well, if that's not translating to game day performance, to me, you're wasting your time at that point. We've heard the reports out of Knoxville that Garantano by far is the better quarterback than any of the three in practice. Well, that's fine, and I believe that. But if it doesn't translate to game day, that doesn't do you a whole lot of good. So to me, it depends on, you know, if Garantano goes out there again and just lights it up and I shouldn't say lights it up, but plays well and they end up losing, you stick with him at that point. If he doesn't and he's turning the ball over left and right, to me, you got to make a change. Like, you can't just keep going back to that well at that point.
I agree with that. By the way, Vrabel told us that Vic Beasley was practicing well Monday. Just throwing that in there on the practice front. But, no, I agree. If it's bad Garantano, Garambato, and he's just giving the other team points, then
you want to trademark that?
that wasn't very good. it works better now that he's tan instead of Tano, though.
Yes.
If he's just giving it away, I agree. And honestly, at that point, I think I probably would just go with Bailey. And you have to simplify things, and at least the fan base, for whatever that's worth, like I think the fan base could probably tolerate 3-7 if you show something with Bailey. Am I wrong on that? I mean, it won't be good. It won't be pretty. It won't be good.
Yeah, I don't know if tolerate's the right word, but I think that would at least give you something to build your hope on heading into next season. You're always kind of looking for that carrot. If you're a Tennessee fan, that would be the carrot.
Right.
But
it's already still the carrot. I mean, he's probably going to be the starter next year.
Unless Garantano comes back.
Oh, gosh. That's true. We do have frozen eligibility. I mean, it's not – I mean, look, it's not like if you're – that. You know, that is going to be interesting. Like, you know, Jeremy Pruitt, you know, really appreciate Jarrett and really think he's ready to move forward.
You know, Jarrett
with
did
his
a real
NFL.
Good job for us. Did a real good job, real nice job for us. But we just told him it was a time to move in a different direction with Harrison.
I mean, is that – I mean, because, like, would Garantano sign up for another year of this?
Oh, I don't know. Like, I think if you're Pruitt – you got to make it pretty clear to him. Like, yeah, you can come back if you want to, but you're not going to play, dude. Like, unless people get hurt, you're not playing. So, transfer, go somewhere else, that's fine. But you're not going to be playing here.
What if you're Pruitt and you're like, well, actually, he's still my best
guy? Well, then he's going to be in trouble. If he trots Jarrett Garantano out there again next year because of this frozen eligibility, it's going to be very rough for him.
Run it back, baby.
It's going to be very rough for him on Rocky Top. I just think, look, Trey Wallace joined me on the Power T podcast last week and basically said, you know, Harrison Bailey, from people he's talked to, knows 30% of the playbook. 30%. And it's not a big surprise. No spring ball. COVID-19 in the fall. He was quarantined for 2 weeks in the fall. It's a lot to ask of a freshman to make that jump anyway. In normal times, it's even more so this year with him. Now, I'm sure that the last couple of weeks that they've had working with him more and getting him more reps, that's probably improved. He probably knows a little bit more of the playbook now than he did at the time Trey Wallace told me that. But you're still talking about a guy, there's no way he knows 100% of what they want to do out there and certainly does not have the experience that Jim Chaney would like at that position.
Right. Yeah, look, I mean, it's not like the whole playbook is there for any game, right? So you can still tailor game plans to him and say, we're doing this. That's what it is anyway.
I mean,
these are our plays, and then these are the little counters of some of these plays, and, you know, this is what we're going to focus on. I mean, you can do that, and you're going to have to help, and there will be a lot more looking to the sideline is what it'll be if he's out there before the snap and things like that. You can make it work. But, again, like, your best bet, as sad as it is Garantano playing well with the whole thing available and, you know, having a chance to beat some of these teams. I think that Harrison Bailey may well be talented or more talented than Garantano and may end up being a much better quarterback. Maybe. But right now, I think you're asking a lot of a freshman who, as you just said, missed all that stuff. And let's not, you know, I mean, it's 3 years ago that, you know, he Garantano lost the job. Right, lost the starting job, but it was like, I mean, Butch was ending, and it was ugly, and it was like, let's see the young guy. This guy's a dual threat. He's so talented. We got to see him out there, right? I mean, you know, it's been what it is with him. You don't know who these guys are until they really get a chance to get out there and play.
Why do you think Maurer hasn't taken that next step? Because honestly, I look at Maurer. I think he's probably more talented than Garantano is from an arm talent standpoint.
I think
he can move around better than Garantano can. But it just seems like for whatever reason, he hasn't taken that next step, or at least hasn't taken that next step in terms of the trust with the coaching staff to put him out there. Why do you think that is?
I don't know, but I think that's exactly right. And what I've been told is that Bailey does some things in terms of getting ready that Maurer hasn't done, you know, in terms of – knowing the offense and just, you got to be a film rat. I mean, you have to be if you want to compete at this level. And so I'm not saying like Maurer doesn't care or whatever, but there's some kind of loss, something lost in the translation there. And some of it is injuries, and he's had these, you know, he's had stuff that has limited him, but that told me everything, you know, after all that happened with Garantano giving it away against Kentucky. I knew that Bailey just made no sense against Alabama, but what happened in that game and how they went about it, to me it was just like, okay, well, they're just out on Maurer then. Because that's, I mean, he played plenty enough last year and has the talent that you should feel comfortable saying, okay, let's try this against Alabama.
And to me, like, as you say that, and Maurer, I guess, not doing the right, or at least enough of the right things to put himself in that position, I don't understand how, if you're him, you're not licking your chops heading into the season. You saw it last year. You know what happens with Jarrett Garantano. It's not like he's going to come in there and just light it up. Maurer was given the opportunity last year and was basically just too careless with the ball. That's what happens. I mean, he was a gunslinger. I think back to the Mississippi State game, which they won. I mean, Maurer's rolling to his right. He throws a 50-yard pass across his body to the other side of the end zone and just gets picked. It's like the easiest interception I've seen in SEC history. Those are the decisions that got you benched.
Yeah.
So you got to clean that up. But also, you got to know if you're Brian Maurer heading into this year that quarterback position with Garantano as a starter is very fragile. And Jeremy Pruitt has not – he's shown that he's not afraid to pull him. So the fact that he's not, I guess, ready to do that right now, to me, would be very disappointing if I'm Brian Maurer. Because I don't think this is a shock that they're in this situation at quarterback.
I agree. So, again, so some of it is out of his hands with COVID and a hamstring. But, yeah, you should have looked at this as a big opportunity, and it should have been there. I mean, he came out in the Indiana game again. It was, like you said, that stuff is – that's mindset work on it. Okay, let's stop taking these risks, things like that. But, obviously, the play-after-play consistency and reliability, Garantano has something that he hasn't been able to find. And it's too bad, because I agree. I think he's definitely more talented than Garantano. I think he has a higher ceiling. Maybe he needs to go somewhere else and find it, find a system that's better, or just whatever, mature a little bit. I don't know what it is, but it has been a big missed opportunity for him, because it's sitting there for you.
When we come back, could Jeremy Pruitt make yet another staff change at the end of this season at Tennessee? We'll discuss that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Tune into this weekend's NFL Game of the Week on 102.5 The Game, brought to you by Red Spirits and Wine in Bellevue and Gary Force Acura. This Sunday's NFL Game of the Week is the Pittsburgh Steelers against the Dallas Cowboys. Coverage begins at 3 p.m. with a 3:25 kickoff. Welcome back in. Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. And Joe, talking about the Vols here, we've seen it. Jeremy Pruitt not afraid to make staff changes. There's been a ton already through the first 3 years of his tenure at Tennessee. And I think there's one that could be on the horizon if things don't turn around the rest of this season at Tennessee, and that is at offensive coordinator with Jim Chaney. I'll go on record. I have been thoroughly unimpressed by what I've seen from Jim Chaney so far this year at offensive coordinator. Now, I know some listeners may hear that and they say, all right, well, what do you want him to do with Jarrett Garantano at quarterback? I hear that. And I understand that. Josh Palmer, to me, is a good weapon. Bayless Jones, I think, is a weapon they haven't used hardly at all. Dalen Hyatt's a good weapon. And I've yet to see Eric Gray and Ty Chandler out on the field together at the same time for any length of time whatsoever. I think the play calling and the design and the concepts have been incredibly vanilla from Jim Chaney. How much of that has to do with the quarterback, I don't know. But even if your quarterback limits what you can do, you have to be more creative than what he's been if you hope to win at the SEC level. This is a really crucial stretch to me for Jim Chaney and his future at Tennessee.
Yeah, and look, I mean, some of this really is like, that didn't work and you should have done something different. But I hated the Georgia game. I said it at the time and wrote it and went through all the and watched every play of that game again, and I think he completely abandoned the run game in that game when you had to, even if it wasn't really producing a lot, you had to stick with it. You had to let your offensive line have a chance to do what it does well. But then, you know, the Kentucky game, you come out and it's like they reverted to the shoot, we don't really trust Jarrett to throw passes anymore offense. And you can't do that either. I mean, if that's the case, then you have to have a different quarterback in there. So some of this, it's different things every week. But overall, I just feel like there's a lack of creativity. And there's a too much predictability. And like you said, I think there are some weapons that are just not being utilized. Some of that probably is quarterback limitation.
It's been very disappointing to me how little they've used Josh Palmer. He basically runs vertical routes and runs out routes. That's how they've used Josh Palmer. I saw a stat. I think David Ubben from The Athletic had this in a piece. I think he's been targeted 36 times this year. Only 20 have been considered catchable balls, which is pretty incredible when you're targeted 36 times.
Yeah.
Josh Palmer has come down with 19 of them. So you throw him a ball in his range, he's probably going to go get it. That should tell you something if you're an offensive coordinator. Get him the ball more.
Yeah.
It has been very disappointing to me they haven't done that.
Well, it's like the way Georgia plays defense, that was perfect. I mean, Garantano put it up, and Palmer made those plays. The second one was an incredible catch.
Yeah.
That was a low percentage chance that that's going to be a catch, and he caught it for a TD. So, yeah, get him the ball, get him some chances to run with it, you know, earlier and things like that. And they're not using the tight end at all, but I think that's more a personnel thing. You know, I think that they probably would, but right now they just, you know, they don't really.
If Austin Pope was in there, I think they would be using the tight end more.
Yeah, and I do like a lot this jumbo thing that they have been doing, and they've done it well, and in short yardage they've been excellent. I mean, they've basically been able to convert just about every time in those third or fourth and one situations. So that's a bit of creativity that has worked for them, bring in some of those guys, you know, the Cooper Mays and some of those guys. You should be able to take advantage of the advantage you have up front. As I still believe this is it's not a perfect offensive line. You got some young guys who still aren't all the way there who I think are going to be pros. I think Wanya Morris is going to be a really good NFL tackle. And right now he's not a finished product. He's a second year in college guy. So it's not perfect. And look, I think Cade Mays was very disappointing in the game at Georgia, but still, that's still a very good offensive line. And I just don't think that they have capitalized on it enough. I hadn't really thought about the idea of Gray and Chandler together, but that's you know, an interesting thought. And those guys are, again, that's a strength of your team. And the bottom line is it's not translating into production and points like it should be.
Well, I bring the Gray and Chandler thing up together because he said he was going to do that before the season started. And you're like, okay, well, I guess that makes sense. They're two of your best playmakers offensively, and you just haven't seen a whole lot of it. Now, maybe that's just how the games have gone. I don't know. But putting Ty Chandler in the backfield, lining Eric Gray up in the slot, I think a lot of Tennessee fans thought you're going to see some of that heading into the season, and we just haven't. And this discussion about Jim Chaney, it goes back to his time at Georgia. I remember when Tennessee basically stole him away from Georgia. And a lot of Georgia fans I talked to were like, yeah, you can have that guy. Trust me. And I was thinking, okay, well, this is just your typical fan that they've lost their offensive coordinator. And anytime you lose a coach, you think to yourself, well, he wasn't really that good. It's more the program we've got here. So I just kind of rolled my eyes. And so far, what Georgia fans have said about Georgia or about Jim Chaney and the vanilla play calling, I think absolutely has played out at Tennessee so far.
Yeah, well, there's that. There's the whole whoever leaves or, you know, if you lose a recruit, yeah, I really didn't want that guy anyway, right? But also, I mean, let's face it. The offensive coordinator in football, I think, is easily, by far, the most scrutinized and criticized and ripped and questioned assistant coaching position in sports. You know? I mean, it's the one person on game day that you know exactly what, I mean, you know exactly what he did on every play. Like, you know exactly what the offense coordinator called on every play. So anything that doesn't work, well, it must be the OC's fault. So fans go overboard with that a lot, and sometimes sometimes it's not fair. But the vanilla thing does, I mean, you look back at Georgia, I think that Fromm was limited. And so they had some limitations. Like, what would Jim Chaney have done? Would we think differently if he had Justin Fields? You know, if he had stayed, maybe. Maybe it's just, hey, a lot of coaches, like Mike Vrabel, say it's about the players, not the plays. That's a Vrabel statement. But it doesn't seem like Chaney has maximized what he has. I think he has a pretty good all-around collection of talent over there. And at some point, if the production isn't there, then how do you not look at him?
And I wonder if there's a point this year where Jeremy Pruitt considers moving on. I mean, the salary, it's hard to move on from. He's making $1.6 million this year, scheduled to make $1.7 next year if he stays on. So if you're getting rid of a guy like that, I mean, that's a hefty price to pay if you're Tennessee. But like
Tennessee, they've shown they do.
They're not really afraid to do that. Like, do you think that Jim Chaney's job is in jeopardy these last five games here if things don't get pretty dramatically better?
It's a good question. I don't think it's a good sign for him that Pruitt went out of his way to, in the same post-game press conference, twice question one of his play calls. You know, doing the whole, I mean, it's my fault, but...
Which is basically just window dressing it, yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, that's not a good sign. And it's also not a good sign for Jim Chaney that Jeremy Pruitt will just fire assistants left and right whenever he feels like it and just take over the D-line in the middle of a year. So
can Jeremy Pruitt coach the D-line and be the offensive coordinator at the same time?
Good question. I'm sure that would be comforting to Tennessee fans. Maybe quarterbacks coach too.
Yeah, I mean, why not?
We won't talk about Chris Winkie that much, but, man, I don't know what's going on with some of those young quarterbacks. I think it's possible. I mean, I think that is a little bit cost prohibitive. I mean, like, if you're Philip Fulmer, it's like at some point, I mean, look, you know, LSU, did the LSU just have all these layoffs and stuff and furloughs? I mean, even the schools that are printing money right now have to think of things a little bit differently, right?
You do. The reason I think this is an interesting question is if you're Jeremy Pruitt, I think you have to be honest with yourself after this season and ask, okay, if the quarterback position changes and Harrison Bailey comes in, do you think it looks much different under Jim Chaney in there? Because if the answer is no and you don't have confidence moving forward, what's better, to hang on to Jim Chaney for another year and then get rid of him and throw something new at Harrison Bailey after that? Or is it better to just heading into next year say, hey, we're going a different route, and Harrison Bailey, you can learn with the rest of us? I don't know what the answer to that is.
Well, but I think if you really look at that whole thing, it kind of goes along with everything with Tennessee about continuity and stability. You got to give Jeremy Pruitt time. I believe that. And Jeremy Pruitt's got to have some stuff that continues. Like, you're going to switch up systems. You're going to bring in somebody totally new and do something totally different and say, Harrison, forget this, all this terminology now, it's this. You better be really excited about who you're bringing in then, you know? I mean, to me, it's you're tied to Chaney not just because of cost, but because of just the fact that it's almost like the Titans and Clowney right now. Like, do better, please? Can you please do better? I mean, it's kind of what it is. Like, if you're on this timeline of whatever they're going to be, it's probably going to be a big pressure situation for Pruitt going to next year, right? It's
not, oh, yeah.
And so if you're him, do you want to also be bringing in a totally new offense in that situation?
Ooh. Well, maybe not, but that, like, depends on how you feel about Jim Chaney. Like, if you get through the end of this year and you're convinced, if you're Pruitt, that it's not going to get any better, I mean, my guess would be he has no choice at
yeah,
that point, but
if it's
it.
That bad, if it is that bad, you know, I mean, that's if it's, you know, you got to get more creative, got to do a better job of getting guys in position, call better plays, please. Call the touchdown play that worked, call the first down plays and not the negative loss plays, yeah. Please. I think to me, it would have to be that, like, it's a disaster and it's toxic and they aren't getting along and they just have to make a move. Because you are – that is a big – I think to me you're potentially making it even tougher on you, on yourself next year and your team by doing that.
Real quickly, let's go to our text line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Ron texts in the beginning of the season, I thought Tennessee was trending up with the running game and with their ability to help the quarterback. But now I hope Pruitt can sell honey to a bee, because this year will hurt in recruiting five-star players when Tennessee can barely get five-star recruits. Looks like Tennessee will take yet another step back when being ranked against the big dogs. So an important stretch coming up for Pruitt. And I think recruiting is a big part of that, which is why I continue to say this game against Arkansas on Saturday, the most important game Pruitt has had in his career at Tennessee. When we come back, Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason will join us. That's next. This is Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rexrode here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rexrode, Ryan Porth taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. And we are pleased to go to our 102.5 The Game phone line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com and bring in Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason. Derek, what's going on, man? Thanks for taking time to join us.
Hey, man, up and early, man. We got to get to work today. Man, it's a Wednesday. Obviously, we were off yesterday, but worked on Monday and got a chance to look at the tape. And continue to keep this thing moving forward as we get ready for Mississippi State.
Absolutely. And, Derek, obviously a tough loss to Ole Miss. What did you see that went wrong defensively in that game, and what do you think you can learn from that and move forward with you heading into this week?
Yeah, I think for us, you know, collectively, when you look at the defensive unit and the defensive side of the ball, you know, we gave us some explosive plays, too many. And, you know, getting guys back and, you know, guys being on the same page and being able to communicate, even though we had veteran guys, you know, we felt like we were chasing it, you know, in most of that ball game. And we got caught in some matchups, you know, over the top help, didn't quite get to where it needed to be. We missed a couple of checks. And when you do those things, like in a ball game like this, it can get out of hand. You know, man, and I thought, you know, man, their wide out, like in their quarterback played, you know, man, lights out, but we gave them way too many, you know, man, free opportunities and open opportunities. And for us, you know, man, that's all information. I think this group came back on Sunday, man, they saw exactly what was on tape. And, like, believe me, everybody was pissed, you know, like across the board. And believe me, like being mad is the first part of it. Now getting it fixed, getting back to work, understanding that we got a team that's very, very similar, like an explosive in Mississippi State who's going to try to, you know, hang 50 on you. You better have a chip on your shoulder, and that's where we at.
So, Derek, how is there a translation from last week to this week? I know Mississippi State is very much struggling where Ole Miss isn't in terms of producing lately, but how similar are the systems? I mean, is there any benefit at all to going from one to the other the very next week?
I think there is. I think, you know, obviously understanding that you are going to get tempo, understanding that you are going to get spread offense. They're going to take shots. You know, how do we want to defend these shots? What does it look like? You know, maybe how much do we want to pressure? You know, our tackling, you know, vision defense, being able to make sure, man, that we can, you know, man, get them off the field. We didn't do a very good job last week, and all that information, it's on tape, and you got to change the tape.
Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And, Derek, Ken Seals, really good day statistically on Saturday, 31 of 40, 319 yards, two touchdowns. But besides that, just watching him play, I thought he made some really good throws in that game, some high-quality level throws. Are you seeing the development from Ken Seals that you expected to see up until this point?
Absolutely. Ken Seals is what we thought he was coming out of high school. You know, he's got a big arm, you know, extremely accurate. You know, for him, it's been about getting to know this, his offensive weapons. Coach Fitch doing a good job of making sure, man, that he's in tune with, you know, read progressions, giving him some different platforms to throw from. And as we can see, he can make tight window throws. He can push it down the field. You know, he can give guys a shot. He's going to be a really, really good quarterback in this conference. You know, all we're looking to do, you know, every week is get incrementally better. We need to go 1-0 this week. We do have that opportunity on our plate. And you know, Ken Seals is the leader of that offense. So those guys are following, and we're glad to have him as our quarterback.
What's his, in terms of, I guess, you know, quote-unquote, knowing the whole playbook, you know, like where is he on that? Like a year from now, is he going to be a guy who does more pre-snap, you know, changes protections more often, things like that, or is he – up to speed even as a freshman on all the things you want a quarterback to do mentally?
I think he's past Kyle Schirmer where Kyle was when Kyle was a freshman, but I think that leads you to about, you know, maybe in this offense he may have maybe 45 to 50% of the offense down. I mean, that's how much offense Coach Fitch has. I think what Coach Fitch has been able to do is just, again, try to tailor it for him. You know, I mean, what pieces does he need? What pieces does he need to move away from right now? And what really fits the personnel that we have? Again, you know, in COVID from week to week, man, you don't know who's up. So you got to have a a couple of different personnel groupings to see how you want to, you know, maybe formulate your game plan around, you know, who's available to you, because it's definitely about players. But I think when you got a quarterback, and you got some running backs, and you got tight ends and some wideouts, I think that allows Coach Fitch to do a really good job of putting, you know, like a solid plan together that fits both, you know, our talent that week and the quarterback. And that's what's been impressive to see over the last 3 weeks.
Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason on the line with us, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Derek, Joe brought up, you know, Mississippi State struggling right now offensively, but traditionally the air raid has been very effective for Mike Leach in his stops before. What is the challenge in defending the air raid system and everything that comes with that?
You know, the biggest thing is, you know, can pass rush and coverage, you know, men work together. Pass rush and coverage have to work together because, you know, in that system, they're going to take shots. It's five out passing game. You know, it's always, or 80% of the time, they're in some form of empty, whether the back is in the backfield or not, because the running back has as many catches, or the running backs have as many catches as the wideouts. So you've got to defend the horizontal space of the field, and they're going to push it vertically. And so, like defending all the space, whether it's, you know, sideline to sideline or end zone to end zone, that's what they make you do. So creating the one-on-ones is the menu of the day. And so for us, we got to get eyes on the quarterback, but we got to populate to the football, which hasn't been something that we've been, been real strong in, you know, since the Texas A&M game. And, you know, that's sort of the menu of the week for us. That's what we got to do. We got to populate to the ball. We got to work, like, to get to the run game. And if we do that, we'll set ourselves up to hopefully, you know, get them turned over on third downs and get our ball and get the ball back to the offense. And if we can do that, I think our offense can attack their defense.
Well, you said it hasn't been strong since the Texas A&M. Why hasn't it been strong since that game, Derek?
You know, consistency. You know, I mean, to be honest, I mean, I think that's probably the healthiest we've been, you know, I mean, going into it. And the reality is, you know, when you start playing different combinations, you know, like the guys, and guys are still trying to learn guys, and guys are getting used to how guys communicate. And then even when you get veterans back, guys haven't played with each other for a minute. I think it's just about consistency. I thought that wave during camp was probably the most consistent we had been, even though we lost a couple of guys. I mean, it wasn't a huge amount, and it was spread out on both sides of the ball. So I just think the level of consistency, you know, from week to week, of players that have been available has been a little tricky. But, you know, everybody's got these challenges. For us, man, we got to overcome the challenges, put ourselves in position to play a 60-minute ball game, one quarter at a time, one play at a time.
Vanderbilt football coach Derek Mason has been our guest here on Robbie and Rex Show. Derek, we appreciate you taking time to join us, and good luck on Saturday against Mississippi State.
Thank you. Rob, Rex Road, anchor down. Talk to you soon.
Absolutely. Going to be an interesting matchup on Saturday because, look, it's amazing to see just like how far Mike Leach and that program has fallen after week one. They were the talk of the SEC. They go into LSU and get the win on the road, and everybody's thinking, man, look at Mike Leach bringing the air raid to the SEC. It's going to work. I think we've come to find out since then that LSU, not very good.
Man.
Mississippi State, maybe even worse.
Yeah, that's amazing. He was already like SEC Coach of the Year, right? After it was like it was pretty much preordained. It's shocking to me to see how inept, because, I mean, Mike Leach has had ups and downs with his offenses, and I know the SEC is a different deal than the conferences he's been in, but he's been in credible Power 5 conferences, and for the most part, they're gonna complete passes. I mean, basically, their passing game is a running game. Like Derek Mason was just saying, you know, it's so much. It's a wide splits, and it's quick hitters. It's basically running the football, and for the most part, they've produced offense, and it's like they have nothing going in the last few weeks. So maybe Vanderbilt can get well defensively, because obviously long, long, long way from last week to be well.
Well, and the bad part, if you're a Vanderbilt fan, is Mississippi State right now last in the SEC West. Obviously Vanderbilt last right now in the SEC East. And Mississippi State is nearly a 3-touchdown favorite in this game. So that kind of tells you how the season has gone so far for Vanderbilt.
I'm a little dubious of that line.
Am
I a little sunshiny?
Well, look, Mississippi State's a 19-point favorite. They have struggled to get to 19 points total as of late.
Right.
I mean, they just got shut out. They scored 2 points against Kentucky. Got shut out against Alabama. The offense, it hadn't seen 19 in a while.
That might be a bad line, but then it'll be like 53-10 Mississippi State, and they'll be the ones who get well. But they have been so bad.
So, yeah, the last three games for Mississippi State, they haven't scored 19. They scored 2 against Kentucky, 14 against A&M, and 0 against Alabama. So there you go.
Man, yeah, I'm sure, you know, this is one of those where both of those maligned units, Vanderbilt offense, Mississippi State defense, are looking at this game like this. If it's going to happen, if we're going to do anything good, this is it.
When we come back, we will dive back into the news of the day with the Titans. They released Vic Beasley, Bo Brinkley, and Jonathan Joseph yesterday. Should they have seen this coming with Vic Beasley? We'll talk about that on the other side of the break. But first, 102.5 The Game and ESPN 94.9 is your exclusive home for the 2020 Masters Tournament. Tune in to 102.5 The Game for leaderboard updates next week on Thursday and Friday. And then on Saturday and Sunday, November 14th and 15th, ESPN 94.9 will broadcast the Masters live both days. It's all brought to you by Music City Golf Store in Belle Meade for all your golfing needs. We'll be right back on Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road here on ESPN 102.5 The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Ryan Porth taking you through this Wednesday morning here in Nashville, Tennessee. The news of the day yesterday for the Titans, they release Vic Beasley, Bo Brinkley, and Jonathan Joseph. So the poll question we put up yesterday at 102.5 The Game apparently has got some power to it. We asked, who would Titans fans rather vote off of Titans Island, Jonathan Joseph or Vic Beasley? I think Jonathan Joseph ended up with about 55% of the vote. Vic Beasley with 45, and the Titans decided to get rid of him. Both of them.
Yeah, they
doing
said,
the
hey,
fans a service. It's so close, we'll get rid of both of them for you.
Quite a newsy day. Interesting how that came down, too. So it's Brinkley and Joseph are released. So it's like, okay, big news. Wow. They, yep. And again, I looked at that. I was like, Joseph, okay, yeah, I'm not surprised. Bo Brinkley, wow. But that's a position that if you're talking about the long snapper, then it's probably not going well for the long snapper.
Probably
long,
not.
Long snapper does not need to be talked about. So they have Overton as a replacement. But then it's later they come with the Beasley, and it's the news. You know, Beasley has been told he'll be released tomorrow.
Yeah.
It's kind of an interesting way of going about that whole thing. So
then we have
today he gets released.
Yeah, today he's going to be released. Today we have the poll question at 102.5 The Game on Twitter. Are you disappointed the Titans didn't make another trade before yesterday's deadline? They bring in Desmond King on Tuesday, I guess it was? Monday. I'm getting my days mixed up. Monday is when they brought him in, Monday afternoon. And we were asking the question yesterday, do the Titans have anything left up their sleeve at the trading deadline that did not come to pass? The poll question, the options are, yes, they needed to do more at the deadline. No, there were no moves out there worth making. Or no, they're quite simply good enough right now as they are. The results so far, over 250 votes, 43% say no moves worth making. 42% say yes, they needed to do more. And 15% say no, they are good enough as currently constructed.
The sunshine blowing 15%. All is well.
Honestly, that 15% number is like really high to me. Like I thought there'd be maybe 1%.
Is that Colts fans trolling the poll? I mean, is that what's going on here?
Could be.
Is that Todd, our Jaguars fan who we haven't heard from lately? Like,
yeah, Todd's been a little silent lately.
Stuff in the ballot box there.
Maybe so. But hey, look, they are 5-2. They've gotten to 5-2 despite this atrocious defense.
This is true. It's good to keep in mind.
That may get Arthur Smith a head coaching job by itself. Like if they end up 10-6 this year, 11-5 with that defense, that's the first thing I'm putting on my resume.
Yeah. Well, if their offense keeps producing, and it didn't produce like it needs to produce against Cincinnati, but if it gets back on track there without Taylor Lewan, that's another line on the resume.
So we asked the question earlier regarding Vic Beasley. Is he the worst signing in Titans history? And there are a couple different arguments you can make. I went with Carl Pickens. Joe, you and Porth both went with Vic Beasley. But regardless, we can all agree it was a disaster of a signing for John Robinson and the Titans. And the question is, should they have seen this coming with Vic Beasley, giving everything coming out of Atlanta. Chris Domino from 680 The Fan in Atlanta joined Darren Donick and Chase on September the 21st, and in retrospect had some very interesting comments regarding Vic Beasley. Here's what Chris Domino had to say.
Very nice guy. Who doesn't want to play football? The idea that Mike Vrabel might have actually been okey-doked on this one is amazing to me. It's amazing to me. Because Mike Vrabel, there's not a letter. You'd have to go so far beyond Z if you wanted to talk about their want on a football field. You know what I mean? Like, you couldn't compare Mike Vrabel and Vic Beasley in the same sentence when it comes to the want to be on a football field. And that's why I'm a little bit surprised that it feels like, again, I don't know what the conversations were, but it feels like the Tennessee Titans got okey-doked. You can't look grown men in the eye and say you're going to do a deal like that and then all of a sudden go, yeah, I'll be there when I'm going to be there. I'd rather have an undrafted guy at a Southern Miss who is willing to, throw his body around like he's a launched missile just to impress somebody and then go, you know what it is? I'm happy to be here, and I'm going to prove to you that I'm worth every dollar you spent and more, but I won't ask for another dollar. Because I just want to, you know, I'm one of those guys who wants to prove I can be in his league. That's not who he is right now.
So that was Chris Domino from 680 The Fan in Atlanta back on September 21st with Darren Donick and Chase. And looking back on that conversation, did the Titans get duped by Vic Beasley? Did Mike Vrabel and John Robinson get duped by Vic Beasley and misjudge maybe his want to or his desire to be here and play football? Joe, I think that is a very interesting question to look back on now that we know what has transpired with Vic Beasley.
Yeah. Were they duped? Was there disagreement among scouts, even maybe disagreement between Robinson and Vrabel? I do think Chris brought up the point of want to as a player, which is interesting to think about the contrast between Vrabel as a player and Vic Beasley. But again, this is also, I think, this is a Vrabel as a coach move. At least in part, the idea that, okay, this guy hasn't been producing, has lost some love for the game, whatever it is, we got a guy who's going to get him going. We got the guy right here who's going to figure it out, unlock him. Yeah, I'll tell you, many days on that practice field, they have a, you've got the field, you can't report stuff on like the side field and then there's the main field, but I can say, look, Vrabel worked a lot. Specifically with Vic Beasley on specific stuff, trying to get him going. I mean, that's more technique stuff, of course.
Right.
But the idea of motivation and just finding the key to reach a player and get him going was, I think, absolutely why this risk was taken, or part of why this risk was taken. Did Vic Beasley dupe them and say, I love football. We are going to the bowl. Let's go, baby. I don't know. But however it all came about, it's a disaster.
Well, it's hard to like have this conversation with Vic Beasley, not ever talk to him. Like, no one's ever seen him. Like, you had a Zoom call with him one time.
Right.
So, like, we hear the reports out of Atlanta that football maybe wasn't the most important thing to him. Maybe he didn't even know if he wanted to play football moving forward. And then you couple that with what happened at training camp and him being 10 days late to show up. That's the evidence we have to go on right now, that maybe Vic Beasley just didn't really want to be here. And if that's the case, that would certainly help explain why when he was here, the production was non-existent. I mean, what do you have, two tackles here during his time with the Titans? I mean, it was a total disaster. But it's weird to have this conversation about a guy's lack of want to without ever really talk to the guy. The only thing we have is the evidence that we've seen both from Atlanta and in training camp for the Titans. And unfortunately, in 2020, that's just what we have to go on.
Yeah, and I mean, he was asked something along those lines and that one availability and said, yeah, I'm sure I can go back and find it. Yeah, I love football. Like, no, anyone's going to be like, actually, I hate football and don't want to be here, but I'm going to get paid. By the way, for the earlier texter who asked about the if the Titans actually didn't have to pay as much, it was a total of $500,000 in fines. So it's accurate to say $9 million.
Right.
So they end up paying $9 million for nothing, not $9.5 million. So,
do you feel less strong now about your comparison to Heath Ledger's Joker setting money on fire in a garage somewhere?
That's just taking a couple little stacks of it and moving them off to the side, then pouring the gasoline, then lighting the match.
Our good friend Bob on Twitter tweets in, says they have been duped by both Beasley and Jadeveon Clowney.
Yeah, see, I disagree with that, and I know. I know that Clowney has not at all earned $13 million, but I see Clowney trying. Like, Clowney didn't try to completely botch tackling Joe Burrow. Clowney made a great move to get in the backfield. Well, that was a different play. But the backfield, I think, was an A-gap blitz, right?
Yes.
He like, it wasn't like Clowney's like, yeah, I don't really care about this stuff. I'm just going to not tackle Joe Burrow. He didn't make the play. You got to make the play. You get paid that kind of money, you got to make the play. I don't watch Clowney and think he's not trying. I just see him not making impact. Beasley, I don't know if I could sit here and say he's not trying, but it was no difficulty ever in him being blocked. There was no indication that he was ever going to do anything. That's a big difference.
Yeah.
There's a big difference.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHunted.com. Got a texture that says the Titans need to get on the phone with Cam Wake, Clay Matthews, or Terrell Suggs.
Terrell Suggs, another old guy you can call up. Okay.
Of those three, who do you get on the phone with first if you're John Robinson? Terrell Suggs, Clay Matthews, Cam Wake. Cam Wake's been here.
Yeah, like, I want to know if Cam Wake is healthy. Cam Wake, you know, very well documented. Cam Wake eats like three pieces of celery a day, and he's like the most healthy guy in the world, you know? That's why he got a three-year, $23 million deal a year ago from the Titans to come here as a 37-year-old, because he was still producing and he was in unbelievable shape. Then he had the injury and they moved on. I'd start there. He knows the defense. He knows the guys. They'd get along with him, I think, fine. And look, the little bit we saw of Cam Wake last year, again, in situational, kind of basically what Beasley was brought in to be this year, was way better than what we saw from Beasley this year. I have no idea if he can still do it or if he'd want to do it or if he's okay playing for like $2 million. But that's my first call. I mean, why not? At this point, I mean, you have to be open to just about anything.
Yeah, you do. And the other thing the moves yesterday tell me, especially with Jonathan Joseph being cut, look, we all knew that this was probably going to happen at some point. Jonathan Joseph, I think he was trying hard. I don't think effort was a problem. I just don't think he could play anymore. Like, I think the speed, the footwork, is just not where it used to be. But the decision to cut him yesterday tells me that Adoree Jackson's probably ready to go this week against Chicago. Otherwise, why are you making the move now? Like, it doesn't make a whole lot of sense.
Yeah,
if he's not.
Yeah, and again, this is the third week. The designated to return from IR is a three-week window, so it has to be this week. Or I guess he has to go back on IR. So again, unless there was some kind of setback, and their practice is open today at 12:20, I'll be out there, take some awesome videos. So look for those. I'm really good at the videos. I'm kind of a burgeoning videographer.
Yes, you are.
But if he's out there like you think, and again, I think when he's been out there, he's looked just fine. He's running. He doesn't have anything on either knee. He looks good. Then, yeah, I think you're right, Robbie. I think one of the things that says is that Adoree will be out there, which makes him better. Snap the fingers. They are better now with Adoree Jackson out there and Jonathan Joseph not out there.
Let's go back to the text line driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Nate texts in and says, I wasn't going to touch the Titans-Bears game this weekend, but with the release of Bo Brinkley, it might be in play for me now.
Meaning?
So how big of an impact, how many points is Bo Brinkley worth in the game?
So wait, but is that like good that Bo Brinkley's gone or bad? Who is this?
That's Nate.
You need to elaborate, Nate. Because some people out there, tough guys on Twitter, say Bo Brinkley.
Yeah, tough guy Alex on Twitter. Thinks that Bo Brinkley's just had a rough year. He's been terrible.
Yeah.
I can think of two snaps. Maybe three.
Three.
Okay. See, Porth's got three.
I think you're letting Goskowski off the hook in that Denver game for the one snap. They got the hold down fine.
Yeah, the hold was fine. But again, we're just judging the snapper. So,
sure.
So, that's still, if the holder makes up for the snapper, then that's still the snapper made a mistake. But I had someone else, not tough guy Alex, but somebody else was like, in the last few weeks, he's had like three or four every game. I'm like, what?
Am we
I
missing
not
something?
Seeing here?
Yeah.
I mean, it is possible. Look, I'm sitting in the press box, kind of far away. Some like if they're a little bit off.
Would you say your vision is what it used to be?
No, not quite.
But still, you can see the snaps.
Yeah, I mean,
I can think of two snaps.
If they're bad, like when you bounce one halfway like he did,
yeah,
the other
pretty
day,
bad.
You can see that. But I guess if they're a little bit off, if a lot of them have been a little bit off, that's still something. But I certainly didn't detect that. That would make more sense,
yeah,
that they cut him.
When we come back, former Titans wide receiver Nate Washington and co-host of Nate and TD will join us. That's coming up next. We'll get into is A.J. Brown established himself as a true number one receiver in the NFL? That coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road live from the Wholesale Link Studios, powered by RumbleOn.com, here on ESPN 102.5 The Game.
Hey, it's Ryan Seacrest here, and I have discovered a fun new escape from the daily grind, Chumba Casino. Chumba Casino has hundreds of social casino-style games that's all free to play anytime, anywhere with daily bonuses. So get to chumbacasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 21+.